All right, final segment of the night tonight, Destination 2026, Houston's countdown to the Cup with that after the World Cup. A man that called the World Cup, played in the World Cup, and now has a coaching academy in New Jersey. He is a frequent guest on this show. He's Tab Ramos. He joins us now. Tab, how are you?
Very good. Yeah, a little bit going through the withdrawal of not having the World Cup every day, but, dealing with it one day at a time.
All right, so as a unique person that's played in a World Cup and now has done commentary on it a number of times, how is that different for you personally?
Well, I mean, there's nothing will ever equal playing in it, you know? That's always the best, you know, being able to walk on the field and play the actual game. So there's nothing like that. But you know, having the opportunity to live it, being in the stadiums, seeing the feelings of all the players and how much it means to them, to be able to walk out, you know, in front of a full stadium and represent their countries. Those are all special feelings, you know, and it's part of, in a different way now, it's nice to be part of that as well.
I'm going to think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to ask you anyway. I think having been a former under 20 national team coach and the career you've had in coaching and continue to have in coaching, that you like the preparation to the actual call of the game.
I do, because it teaches me a lot about different teams that, you know, I had an opportunity to call games like, you know, Curacao, Haiti, I did Ivory Coast. Obviously, I did Brazil, France, I did Croatia, I did Portugal. So I had a chance to look into a lot of the teams in depth and see sort of the type of players that they have and what they've been doing. So it's, for me, that whole scouting part is neat, and it's good to just watch the games knowing a lot more about each player than just watching it as a fan.
General thoughts, what jumped out about this World Cup to you?
I think the number one thing for me was the competitiveness of it, because there was always that concern that going to 48 teams, that there would be these blowout games in the first round, you know, with teams like Cape Verde, right? And in return, not only did we not get that, I think there was one game, might have been the Germany-Curacao game, that was a blowout game. And by the way, Curacao at one point tied that game, right? So it was exciting for at least part of the half. But we expected a lot more of those games and we didn't get them. And on the other side, I think we got a lot more back in return, because I feel like teams like, you know, Cape Verde give inspiration to a lot of other countries that have never participated in the World Cup, and look at what it's done for their country, not just on the soccer side. And I'm sure every kid in Cape Verde now wants to be a soccer player and one day play in the World Cup, but it's done it in terms of, like, you know, people wanting to visit the country, tourists going into the country. I mean, it's just, you know, the return on this worldwide has been huge, because we're talking about just one country, but how many other islands now are thinking, hey, maybe we can be the next Cape Verde? So I think it was excellent. I think as negative as I felt going into the World Cup, you know, about having 48 teams, the one thing that stuck out to me was the competitiveness and how right they were to make it as big as they made it.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I have family in the Caribbean, and a lot of people, well, where's Curacao? I said, well, it's a part of the ABC Islands, which are, you know, Aruba, Bonaire, Curacao, right off South America. So I think just from looking at a map, people are trying to find out where these countries are. So it is very, very cool. Tab, like myself, called the games for the World Feed. Okay, so your favorite moment, and I know these are kind of, it's really hard to pick one, but for the sake of having a bit of fun here, what was your favorite moment in this World Cup? Maybe it could be an individual player, team, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and that's hard to pick, because there were so many great moments, because we and I'll pick one, but it was so nice to see that so many games were decided right at the end. So we had a lot of different moments to choose from. I mean, I'd have to say when Cape Verde tied Argentina, you know, in that goal, and,
oh, yeah,
you know,
yeah,
to make it, you know, to make it 2-2, maybe that was my favorite moment. You know, although that didn't win a game, I think it when it was one of those moments where it left everyone with their mouths open all over the world, because the fact that they were even in overtime against Argentina, and then Argentina takes the lead again, but then Cape Verde being able to come back one more time, I think maybe that's the moment for me. Besides, obviously, for Ron's goal to win the World Cup, maybe that was my favorite moment.
Yeah. Speaking of Spain and the World Cup winners, we're talking to Todd Ramos, former U.S. men's national team player, played in multiple World Cups, has called multiple World Cups as a commentator, and also remains in coaching. By the way, how do you have time for all this?
Yeah, I don't know. Because I do. I have a family too, and I have three kids. And my youngest is now going to High Point University, so we've been dealing with that. She's in the middle of orientation and moving in next month. So I'm not sure how I'm not doing it, but I know that you can tell by my face that sleep has not been on the starting team for me the last couple months.
I want to take you back because I remember when you joined the ASL and I was in the ASL and you were New Jersey Eagles and you were a highly touted young player out of New Jersey. We all knew about you. When did money in soccer become important to you? Because there wasn't a lot of money in this.
You always, to be fair, you always hope that you're going to make it into the pros, and at some point you're going to be able to support yourself by what you make in soccer. But unfortunately, the times we were going through, we were just grinding to stay alive and to try to pay our bills so that we could play one more year, and it wasn't really until I went to Europe, you really until the 1990 World Cup, that I thought, here's something, a new horizon that is opening for me. So I think maybe at that point in 1990, when we made the World Cup team and I signed my first contract overseas, it was the first time where I actually said, hey, I'm making some money now.
Yeah, so that's when it changed. We're talking to Todd Ramos. Anything new as somebody who digs down on the tactical side of it? Any new trends or anything that you saw in this World Cup potentially emerge outside of, the overall outsiders making an impact like Cabo Verde and them? But from a tactical perspective, anything? Or was there just some reaffirming of certain sort of techniques and tactics in the game?
No, I mean, if I had to pick one thing that I thought was impressing for me, and that more teams did it, was utilizing their central midfielders to find space in the box. Whereas in the past, and from watching the EPL, that we all watch, they use a, a lot of teams use their wingers to break down teams, whether it's Doku on one side, Saka on the other. We get used to watching those really skillful wingers to break down teams, and this World Cup was a little different. I didn't feel like there was these outstanding wingers that broke games through, but we did find a lot of eights and tens, a lot of midfielders going into the box from those inside positions to create a numbers advantage into the box. If I had to say something that seemed to me it was a little different, I would say that it was that.
How about outside backs basically getting, like the Hakimis of the world? Colombia had an outside back that these guys repeatedly in games are getting into the box.
Well, I mean, it was clear that the best teams had good outside backs. So if you're going to play, and I always believe this, that if you're going to be a possession team, you can't be a possession team if your outside backs don't have good feet and can get forward, because they need to be those added players. So we saw that. But having great outside backs, all the great teams have had them. I mean, I know I'm a little bit young to remember the 1970 World Cup, but I do. Yeah, I have seen highlights of the 1970 World Cup, and I can already think of, Carlos Alberto coming through from that position. And then all the Brazilian teams over the years, whether it was, Roberto Carlos or Cafu, or, we've been used to more of these type of outside backs. And I think Hakimi kind of took us back, because he's the complete outside back. But even when you look at Spain and you look at Cucurella on one side and Porro on the other side, they proved that Spain couldn't do without them, and they played a big part on their team.
What about addressing what I thought was amazing in the final, the strength of character and the emotional control? I think that's a lesson to all of us. But, they didn't take the bait against Argentina in that final. Their emotional control to me was something special.
Well, I mean, I think when we talk about emotional control, I think I don't blame, and I've said this before, but I don't blame Argentina for playing as hard as they can play. At the end of the day, if we're talking about whatever happened within the 90 minutes of the game, you're going to play as hard as the referee allows you to play. So if there was any time where Argentina overstepped the boundaries, that's really the referee's fault more than anyone else. Now, we can talk about what happened after the game because I think that's where South America showed its weakness, right? Because the way Argentina left this World Cup, throwing punches after the game, was the same way that Uruguay left the World Cup, was the same way that Paraguay left the World Cup, doing the same thing to France. That's, I think, a part where after the game, some South American teams still don't know how to lose the right way and have a little bit to learn.
As my Argentine friends tell me, it's South American machismo. I don't say that in a negative way. It's just maybe cultural, right? Can some of this be cultural?
Well, it could be, but that has to change because that's not okay. I mean, that's like I said during the game, play as hard as you want, kick as many guys as you want, and then the referee will limit you to what you can and you cannot do. So I don't blame any team for playing as hard as they can play and playing right to the limit during the game. But the things that happen after the game, they're not okay. They're not okay. So it doesn't matter what culture you come from. I think we need to learn that that's never going to be okay.
Yeah, it resonated badly with a lot of people. Do you think the referee, and I get it, because if he's dishing out a ton of yellow cards, he's putting himself in a position he might have to send somebody off. But do you think in retrospect he should have pulled out a few more yellow cards in the first half?
Likely, referees control games in different ways. I didn't think in general the game got out of control. The Spain Argentina game, but you did see that Argentina was being really physical with them. Excuse me, but other than that, I didn't see anything wrong with the game except one team playing hard and the other team was just much better.
Yep. Todd Ramos joining us. He has played in World Cups. He has called them as a commentator. You name it, he's done it. So we see after this, and by the way, we're seeing things in Germany, the Netherlands. They all got knocked out early. They're all disappointed too, just like we are with the US team. We wanted the US to go forward after a bright start. So what jumps out now are the slogans, pay to play, and everybody's shooting it out there. Access for all these kind of monikers and slogans. Everybody's shouting it from the mountaintops. Nobody seems to have a whole lot of solutions. Do you really think, because I have a feeling about this, that there is limited access to the game in the United States?
I don't actually. I think can we do better on the scouting side? Can you we do better on the coaching side? The answer is yes, but you can say that for any country, really. I'd be careful with listening to people who have not actually been in the youth system, because it seems like everyone has an opinion now, and it doesn't matter how what level you ended up playing at. But if you actually have not been in the youth system and you don't know what it's like to develop players, I don't think you're someone that people should be listening to. At this point, pay to play is something that's never going to go away. It's something that exists all over the world. I think if there's something we need to limit is there are too many useless competitions all over the country. Teams are now traveling across states to play against other teams who are not any better than the team right across their town. And I think we need to limit all of that because we're spending a lot of money on the travel that we don't need to spend. Other than that, I think, the 2026 World Cup and the effects of it will be tremendous for us over the next couple of decades. Everything that we're talking about and everything that happened now, including this 2026 World Cup, happened because of World Cup 94 having been as successful as it was. We have a great league, a lot of teams in it, all of that stuff, youth development, all those things. Now we just have to be a little bit patient and let the market develop players a little bit more.
Do you feel as though MLS is giving enough opportunity to the American player?
Again, I think if you're a professional team, your job is to win games. I don't think you have an obligation to play American players. I think American players have to get better and they have to be able to compete for a spot. But I don't think in any by any means there's an obligation. I think when you hire a coach at a team, whether it's Houston or LA or New York or whoever, you know, your obligation as a coach is to try to win games. And so you're going to play the guys that you think are going to win games. Now, some clubs may have a philosophy of allowing more opportunities for young players, and that's great to them. That's something that needs to be approved by the head coach, and the head coach needs to be part of that picture. But in general, professional teams, their job is to win games. And by the way, you know, you'd have to commend a lot of MLS clubs because they're spending tens of millions of dollars on youth development. You know, their best players play for free everywhere, all over the country. They've spent tens of millions of dollars, some clubs hundreds of millions of dollars in youth development facilities. And I think these are all positive things. They just take time, I think, to deliver results. And we have to be patient.
Gustavo Ramos, who's joining us now. But if kids aren't getting through to the first team, just even if it's one, symbolically, cap relief, marketing opportunities, community, all these words that we toss out there all the time, community, community, community. Well, that to me means community's got to put a player through to the first team. And if not, it's fair to ask questions, right? Why they're not getting through, the amount of money being thrown at this?
Right, you know, and I agree with that. And I would say that, you know, the professional teams are not responsible for that. I think it's the market. You know, I think, you know, and obviously I'm sure you've been to La Masia and Barcelona and many other clubs like I have, you
Not
know,
La Masia, but
Bayern.
I did go to
Yeah.
Atlas in the heyday and Rayados in Mexico. I never got to La Masia. I wish I did. That would be nice.
Right. So you have all of those, and whether it's Man City or Bayern Munich or those academies, they end up picking the best players that are coming out of the market. You know, they don't get the players when the players are 4 years old and develop them all the way through. They start picking players as players start to be successful in the market. So I think what we have to focus on is not so much the professional teams. I don't think it's their responsibility. I think it's the market in general and how we can make it competitive enough within our states so that more players are developed.
Tab, you're scaring me because you're now taking the accountability off the pro teams' academies. Because every day we're told how great it is in my city and how great the academy is doing, and I just sit here and I go, "Well, doesn't great mean you're going to have somebody who's in a real role of responsibility with the first team one day that we can get behind?" I mean, we even had, you know, you remember Memo Rodriguez? The community loved that kid. He didn't turn out to be Pelé, but he was a solid player and people liked him and it meant a lot.
Yeah, and you know, and that's a good point. You know, Memo was a great player, really skillful, had the physical ability to cover ground like you should, even though he was mostly a technical player. He wasn't a runner by any means. So that's a good example. And we just have to be patient with developing more players. But you know, I think, you know, Glenn, when you think about soccer players, and this is where somebody like Tom Byers, I think, becomes important because of what he says. And I'm not saying, by the way, I'm a big fan of Tom Byers, but I'm not saying that what he says is the Bible, but I think he's moving in the right direction. I think our country, when it gets to the point where some kid is born in middle America somewhere and the first thing he sees is a soccer ball when he starts to play, I think that's when we're getting somewhere. And I think hopefully this World Cup will do that, because I don't think it's a professional team when they're getting players at 13 and 14 years old that's supposed to just develop that 13 and 14 year old to be the greatest professional player. I think that 13 and 14 year old already have to come from the market at a certain skill level, at a certain comfort with the ball, where the professional team can take them into making them that athlete that will be able to play. So I don't have all the answers by far, but I have coached at all the different levels. And so I understand the youth system. And I do know that where we have to do better is actually in the youth team system and not necessarily the professional teams.
Tab, exceptional stuff as always. We always really value your opinion highly with all of your great experience. Great discussion. Thank you so much for coming on. As always, like I said, I'll remember you in my will for coming on this show so many times. Thank you so much as always.
Thank you, Glenn.
By the way, give a shout out to your academy and your school and what you're doing real fast.
Yeah, so I'm here at my school. It's called the U.S. National Soccer School, and we have this is actually it's a private school where the kids come to school at 8 in the morning, and they go to school from 8 to 12. After 12, they have lunch, and in the afternoon, they have the high performance first for about an hour, and then they play soccer for 2 hours. We're not a club. The kids after on the weekends they go play games for their own club, but their full development during the week they're doing it with us. So really excited to have this. September, we're kicking off in September. We've already been in the offices, as I've showed you our offices. We've been here for about 6 months already, doing all the recruiting process and all of that. But we're going to start in September, and it's going to be a great year, and I'm looking forward to it. And I want my second school that I'm going to open up. It's likely going to be in Texas, so I'll let you know about that one.
Houston's ready for you. We
All
have a
right.
good city for you, I think. A lot of raw material here.
Right.
We have a good city for you. By the way, shoot out the website real fast. Do you have a
www.usnationalsoccerschool.com.
You're the best, Tab. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
All right, that's Tab Ramos. What a way to end it tonight here. By the way, you get the podcast of this show at ESPN975.com, Spotify, Apple. Big thank you to Brian McDonald, our producer here tonight. Until next Tuesday on Soccer Matters on ESPN975, presented by John Daspit and the Daspit Law Firm. I'm Glenn Davis. Good night, everyone.